I won't deny it, I'm a straight rider. You don't wanna fuck with me. Got the police busting at me, but they can't do nothing to me.
Welcome to the Thank You Rob podcast, episode number
19,
unofficially sponsored by Pearson's Salted Nut Roll, made right here in St. Paul, Minnesota. Don't be a butthole, eat a Pearson's Salted Nut Roll. You can check out past episodes of this show at thankyourob.com, where you can also check out my graphic design work, which is mind-blowing and life-altering, known as I Define Design. You can also check out my other podcast called Some People's Kids Podcast. While you're at it, check out this podcast on Fuzz Talk Radio at fuzztalkradio.com. All right, my guest today is Half Dozen. We're live at the Spy House Coffee Shop, the Nicollet location. There's two locations, correct?
Yeah.
This one, the 2451 Nicollet Avenue location. Mm-hmm. Just giving them a little plug.
Oh, you know, yeah. Absolutely.
You come here a lot?
Yeah, this is probably my preferred coffee shop in the metro area.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right. You're not a holiday gas station coffee
guy? I don't drink sludge, man. Yeah. I can't do it. No.
You know, no, I'm not a big coffee drinker.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of am. I drink it just about every day. But yeah. I'm not picky about it.
Right.
So when I come in and I look at a menu like this, I'm very confused. I'm the guy in line that's like, I don't know what to order.
It's pretty complex, that's for sure.
Yeah.
That's
so I got I think it's called Blackout.
Yeah.
It's kind of gross.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, see, I don't do like coffee drinks. I just do straight coffee. Like,
okay.
I like coffee with a lot of cream.
Right.
And I'm diabetic, so I have to use Splenda. But
okay.
I use a lot of that too. So,
right. Yeah. But I'm still drinking it.
Hey.
You know, I paid for it. I'm going to drink it.
Oh,
I'm going to drink it.
Yeah. I'm sure it's pretty costly too.
Well, last episode I had Tim Wilson of Urban Lights.
Okay.
Are you familiar with Urban Lights record store?
Yeah, I know what Urban Lights is.
Okay.
I do not know Tim Wilson. By name, anyway.
Okay.
I may know him if I saw him.
Yeah, if you've been to the shop, you've probably seen him. He's pretty much every time I've been there, he's been there.
Yeah.
But we discussed our top five hip-hop albums, our favorite, personal favorites.
Uh-huh.
Of course, if I asked you that question, we could probably go all day with this, but...
Well, I'm pretty picky, though, so if I had to pick five top hip-hop albums of all time, obviously... since I picked to talk about All Eyes on Me, that would definitely be one of them for me. Just because, I mean, I guess we'll get into it later, so I don't have to go into depth about that one.
Right.
But top five, All Eyes on Me would be one of them. I prefer, a lot of people are going to be mad at me for saying this, and they're always mad, especially other rappers when I say this. But I don't think I would take Nas's Stillmatic, but I would take one from Nas, but it would be the Lost Tapes.
Okay.
I don't know. To me... As far as musicality goes and his understanding of where he was as an artist, like, is a lot more clear on that. It's not structured like an album, but that's, you know, that's kind of partially why I like it, too. He was able to do a lot of different things on there. Blue, Below the Heavens, that would be on there. Then I'd have to probably go with, was actually fortunate enough to tour with those guys recently on the Welcome to Minnesota tour. But Brother Ali's Undisputed Truth.
Nice.
A lot of people like Shadows on the Sun and the Champion EP. But I feel like kind of what I was saying about Nas, I feel like as far as comfortability and, you know, like as a listener, you can kind of feel authenticity, and I feel like he was in a real comfortable spot.
Right.
You know what I mean? And he had a pretty good he ran the gamut on like all the emotions that, you know, he had at the time. So
you know, it's kind of funny in a Brother Ali kind of tangent here. I'm a huge Brother Ali fan.
Yeah.
I love and Shadows on the Sun was actually in my top five.
Oh yeah.
And not to alarm you, but Toki Wright is a table, two tables behind you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he comes around here a lot.
Oh, no.
I had to go introduce myself.
Yeah.
I wanted to interview him on the show. He's got probably good stories to tell.
But. Oh, yeah, he definitely does. Yeah, no, Toki's a good dude.
Yeah.
We actually just did a record together not too long ago.
Right.
Let's see. And for my fifth and final one, that's where it gets tough. I'd probably... that's a rough one. I'd say I'd say Outkast. But which one though? Probably. I don't know. It's kind of a toss up between Elevators and Aquemini.
Okay. So
one or the other. But I love Outkast. It's, I mean, everything they do is ridiculous.
Elevators is
Atlians.
Okay.
Yep.
I didn't want to say.
Oh yeah. Oh,
okay.
No.
Here's the thing: some people say Atlians. Some people say Atlians. I just wanted to hear how you said.
Oh yeah.
That's cool, man.
Yeah.
I'm a big Outkast fan. We've actually talked about Aquemini a couple episodes back too.
Yep.
It pretty in depth, and I'm a big Outkast fan, man. I love pretty much anything they do.
Yeah, they pretty much. I don't. I mean, as far as originality and
and
pushing the genres without cheapening the art form,
yep.
They really do a really good job of that, in my opinion. Probably the best job of any group ever. So.
Right, and in a fashion sense too.
Oh,
you know, more Andre than.
Well, they. I mean, all these kids want to be Andre 3000.
Yeah,
and.
Yeah.
I won't say any artist in particular, but there's a dude who's really, really, like, he's kind of a big deal right now, and I feel like when people are like, oh, he's so great, I feel like what he really did was just sound a lot like Andre.
Yeah,
you
Justin
know.
Bieber, right?
Oh, yeah.
Is that who you're talking
absolutely,
about?
Absolutely. You know it. You know it.
All right, but today, you know, I asked you what album you want to talk about. I threw out some ideas, and you chose All Eyes on Me by Tupac.
Yeah. Shaker.
I'm a big, Tupac Shaker. I'm a big Pac fan.
Uh-huh.
I didn't actually put one of his albums in my top five, but it very easily could have been.
Yeah.
But All Eyes on Me, this album, classic.
Yeah.
It was the first double disc album to go platinum hip hop wise.
If I remember correctly, I think I want to even say it was the first double pressed hip hop album ever.
Right. I think you're right.
Yeah.
Now this album in particular. Released February of 96.
Yep.
I don't know where you were in life. I was a
freshman in high school.
Okay, I was a junior.
Yeah.
Now this was actually, as far as Death Row, they hadn't seen like anticipation for an album like this ever since Doggy Style.
Yep.
So this was really big for them.
Yeah.
Not that they were doing bad.
Right. No. Not by any means. That's
right,
for sure.
Right. They had that Ice Baby money.
Yeah, they did. They did.
Courtesy of Suge Knight.
Yeah.
But this album went 5 times platinum after 2 months.
Yeah.
Pretty big deal.
Yeah.
I don't know how many of your albums have gone platinum, but I think I've got one or two.
We're working on going bronze right now.
Right. I think it starts with like aluminum
and
then metal
and
bronze.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Copper and then bronze,
yeah,
I think.
Copper in there, yeah.
Yeah.
Now this album in particular was Pac was in jail at the time.
Yeah.
Suge Knight basically paid for his release and then in return signed to a 3-album deal.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of speculation around whether he was happy at Death Row or not.
Yeah. I think at first, you know, obviously like any, I mean, you know, Suge put up, I think it was $1.3 million for his bail or $1 million for sure.
It was not a small amount.
Yeah, no, it was a pretty hefty amount. And he got him out, and I think initially he was happy, and I think you see that when you watch the behind the scenes of the California Love video, and you know, I mean, granted, it's a different thing, I guess, because we're underground artists, but you know, those guys are really driven by money, you know, and you know, because you know, for those who don't know, like the history of Tupac, like how he came up, like you know, he used to backup dance, like essentially, you know, for Digital Underground and whatnot.
Yep.
And so for somebody to go from that, you know, being that obscure, and then all of a sudden being like the guy, I don't blame him for feeling that way, you know.
Yeah.
And but I could, you know, when I seen the behind the scenes with the California Love video, like he seemed genuinely happy.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like he was happy, and I don't know if it was happy to kind of spit in the face of those who he felt that wronged him, or if it was happy because he felt like he finally made it.
Mm-hmm.
But regardless, he seemed genuinely happy.
Yeah.
And, so I'd have to say he was happy at first. And then, you know, obviously the rumors, you know, started to swirl around, you know, the Machiavelli time or even slightly before that. And and you can kind of see it in his demeanor in interviews.
Yeah. And, so Pac kind of had this art and theater background.
Yeah.
And, I mean, granted, he kind of had this I guess at this time in his life, he kind of took that Thug Life persona.
Yeah.
I think it was probably before Me Against the World is when the Thug Life album came out, which,
yep.
by the way, I mean, I love that album
oh, yeah.
in particular.
Yep.
I wish they would have done more,
yeah.
you know, Thug Life albums.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
you know, he really kind of took that avenue where he was, you know.
I think it was for, I mean, because, you know, by all accounts from people who really knew him, I mean, and then obviously I didn't know Tupac, so
I can't,
so I can't speak to his character personally, but
right.
I think more than anything what he did is he made music in a way and represented a struggle so well that it made people, even though he wasn't necessarily, you know, a guy who was running around gangbanging and actually, you
right.
know, running the streets, it made it easy to gravitate towards and it made it easy to relate to. Mm-hmm. And in music, if you can do that, you're it doesn't matter what your content is. If you can make your music relatable so that people from all walks of life can understand it and you know, kind of see a part of themselves in you, or mm-hmm. see a part of, you know, you and themselves, then you're doing your job.
Right.
And I think he did that better than anyone ever.
Yeah.
You know.
I agree. Well, my personal favorite Tupac album is actually Me Against the World.
Yeah.
To me, that's there's so many songs on there that are, like, you can tell are from the heart, you know.
Yeah.
Not and All Eyes on Me definitely has a couple of those songs on there.
Yeah, the reason why I think I like All Eyes on Me, and, you know, I'm a person who tries to write personal songs.
Yep.
So, you know, I do appreciate all of his, you know, the majority of his, like, there's songs on his prior work that I like more than, you know, I could argue almost any song on All Eyes on Me. I just think as a collective and, like, where he was at. Because, I mean, I'm from the hood. I like to hear braggadocious shit, you know.
Right.
That's dope to me because that's how, you know, a lot of us carry ourselves. You know what I mean? So it's not that he's, you know, trying to be some, you know, some super cool dude. It's just, you know, that's what he represented. And I respect him for it, you
Understood.
Know.
Now, I did a little research on the album. What I like to do when we talk about an album is research it. And,
yeah.
You know, you can always go to a Wikipedia page
oh,
and
yeah.
read up on it. But
yep.
there's other people who have done, like, major in-depth, like, interviews with artists that have worked with artists. Like,
yeah.
people that have worked with Pac on this album.
Yeah.
I found an interview with the Dog Pound who said the song Got My Mind Made Up, which is the song with Daz Crow.
Got my mind made
Method
up
Man,
on this song.
Red Man.
Get into it.
And I always wondered why. I'm a big Wu-Tang fan, too.
Uh-huh.
At the end of that song, there's Inspector Dex at the end, and he says, INS the Rebel. And that's, like, the only thing he says on
yeah.
that song. I'm like, what the hell?
Right.
It doesn't say featuring him.
Yeah.
It doesn't say anything about it.
Yeah.
So, originally, that song, it was a Dog Pound song.
Okay.
And it had Rage instead of, Lady of Rage instead of Tupac.
Yeah.
And Inspector Deck was on there, too.
Oh, okay.
And apparently, the way it worked at Death Row was when the next project was coming around, everyone kind of contributed their best stuff.
Yeah.
And
yep.
so, Shug was like, let's take that.
Yeah.
And when Shug speaks, you listen.
Oh, obviously. At that time, anyway. Now
yeah,
he gets knocked out
not
by
anymore,
barbers.
So Rage just kind of nominated herself to say, you know, I'll cut my verse, I'll use it on another song or something.
Right, right.
I don't know, it didn't really say what happened to the Inspector Deck verse, but
I would
that
imagine
part.
That it had something to do with the East Coast, West Coast thing,
I suppose.
And them not wanting to promote. I mean,
right.
and, you know, to his credit, Inspector Deck's an amazing MC.
Right.
I feel like he's probably, like, my favorite, like, unsung Wu-Tang member.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
He's just, probably the one. Well, him and Master Killer are probably the two I've heard least
yeah.
as far as their solo material.
Right,
you know?
Right. And they don't have a lot of solo material, but I think Dex, like, and I wasn't a real big East Coast fan growing up. I'm not going to, you know, and I understand, like, that's where the art form was created and,
yep.
you know, and all that. And I appreciate it for what it is. But, you know, I'm a big fan of, like, Nas and, you know, I'd say more so even Big Pun and Big L. For me, more than Biggie. I think Big was very
the
dope.
The other Bigs.
Yeah.
The lesser known Bigs.
I think Biggie was very dope. I think in terms of what I like personally, I prefer those two guys
okay.
over him. But I think Inspector Deck, from what I've heard of him, which is not a lot, but
mm-hmm.
he always, like, he kind of embodied, like, that technical, you know, like, scientific flow
right.
a lot better than,
okay.
you know, like, I think a lot of Ghostface is just kind of his slang, which is, you know, which is why sometimes it falls on deaf ears for me, because I mean, he's still dope, and I'm not discrediting Ghostface, but it's really hard for me to understand thick New York City slang when right. I'm not from New York City. Right. You know what right. I mean? There's right. a lot of stuff he says where I'm like, that sounds dope as hell, and it rhymes tight, right. but I don't know what the fuck it means, you know?
You know, Ghostface taught me that a kilo weighs 1,000 grams.
Right.
It's easy to remember.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Another fact I found was Ambitions as a Writer. That was the first track Pac recorded for this album.
Yeah.
And it was literally like 2 hours after, you know, he got out of jail, went out, got on the plane.
Oh, yeah.
Went into the studio and was just like, bam, bam, bam.
Oh, yeah.
And that was his work ethic is just
yeah,
it's unmatched by. No. Well, I think Lil Wayne kind of touches on. I'm not a Lil Wayne fan though, but
and so I'd say that he does. I just you know, and again, it comes back to you know, what's more relatable. I mean, I can't relate to you know, lollipops and all that. I mean, and not to discredit Wayne, he's an amazing dude. You know, like he makes some great records and people love him. It's just not really my cup of tea. I think. Tupac's, you know, the fact that we watched him struggle and that's what he was rapping about
right.
and made it really, really easy for you to root for him even though he may not have been the best, you know, person to do so. Like,
right.
you know, person to root for. Mm-hmm. But it made it real easy because of all the circumstances and chaos that surrounded him. So, you know, to hear him talk about it and, you know, in his music made, you know, you witnessed it already.
Right.
So you know what he's talking about.
Yep. So the original title that he wanted to name this was Euthanasia.
Yeah.
And I think I got his book, The Rose That Grew from Concrete.
Yeah.
And there's you know notes and stuff in there, and he talks about that as well.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
There's like a big, almost like coffee table book.
Yeah.
I don't know who wrote that, but it's got a collection of, it might even be his mom that put that together.
It probably was.
It was like, they had like, emulated notes from his notebook, like literally, it looks like he has his handwritten stuff. You know?
Right.
Very cool stuff. And again, they talk about his notes and scribbles and stuff from in jail.
Yeah, he was. I'm, and don't quote me on this, but if I remember correctly, Tupac dated Quincy Jones's daughter right before his death, and Quincy Jones, obviously, you know, was able to intercept some letters that he had wrote. You know, poems that he had wrote for his daughter. Mm. I think her name's
Rashida.
Rashida, yeah, Rashida.
And she's an actress.
Yeah, she
she's
is.
She's hot.
Oh, she's very fine.
Yes.
But he, Quincy Jones, and you know, this is one of the greatest musicians, you know, ever. And he said that some of the stuff that he read of Tupac's to his daughter, you know, which were meant for his daughter, whatever, rivaled Shakespearean poetry.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, like, the dude was, and he's just a, I mean, I think he's the only rapper who, for me, was, like, bigger than rap music.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
like, he's bigger. I mean, it's messed up to say that because I don't think, you know, I don't think anybody should be considered that way. But he's, like, he's kind of an enigma, you
right.
know,
right.
in his like, how he's like Elvis. I mean, nobody wants him to die and people want to say he's alive.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, him and, as far as I know, him, Elvis, Jimmy Hoffa, Biggie, they live on an island together. They're just rolling in money.
Oh, yeah.
Now, there's a lot of speculation behind the album.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just going to read, let me just reiterate, this is speculation.
Yeah,
right?
Oh, yeah.
And Nate Dogg is quoted in saying that Tupac wanted out of his contract, that's why he pumped out those three albums really quickly. You know, two discs for All Eyes on Me and then the Machiavelli album.
Uh-huh.
In a matter of months, you know?
Yeah.
No, I don't know if that's true or not, but again, speculation.
Right.
Another speculation was California Love, and maybe this is true. The California Love track was originally all Dre.
Yeah.
And it was to be used for the first Aftermath.
That's a fact.
Okay. And then again, Shug was like, no,
Yeah. Well, if you listen, and a lot of this story kind of tells itself, if you listen to not only All Eyes on Me, but also Machiavelli, there is a bunch of beats that Dre made for those projects that are also Blackstreet beats. When he left Death Row, he produced quite a few songs for the group Blackstreet.
Okay, I remember
the
No Diggity.
Diggity is Toss It Up.
Okay.
Is the song Toss It Up, which was on Machiavelli, but it was recorded during the same time that all this was going on.
Okay.
And there's a couple more. I can't remember. The Don't Leave is... What song? Dun 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 dun.
Well, there's
hold on.
In some of the speculation too, there's like Daz is saying, you know, apparently Dre took credit for some beats, and again, speculation.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Dre would take credit for beats. You know, I don't know. Maybe he had a hand in it, but somebody did more production than him. And then, but you know, Dre takes the credit for it. I don't know how it works,
but
I mean, I've worked with producers and rappers, and I know people want their fucking credit.
Oh, they
give
do.
Give them the credit.
Oh, they do. Yeah. But right before we started that "Don't Leave" by Blackstreet is the same beat as "I Ain't Mad at You."
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay. Okay.
But yeah, there's actually quite a few guys who. Who kind of are like, I did most of Dre's production. One that comes to mind off the top of my head is his name is Melman.
Yep.
He was said to produce the majority of the Chronic 2001.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, Dre.
So that would explain, because I've always wondered what he was all over 2001, right?
Yeah.
And then, like, never heard from him.
And you know why? Because, well, you know, rumor had, like, you would assume that it's because he didn't get his credit.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, he had a photo in the album, but
yep.
If you look in the credits of the album, he doesn't have very many, you know,
right.
Very many,
and
very
even
many asterisks.
Like the Death Row's Greatest Hits album, that 2-disc,
yep.
Are you familiar with that?
Yep.
There was there's a couple of diss songs against Dre, like Who Been There, Who Done That.
Yeah.
That track is kind of basically saying exactly that.
Right.
And then they also took Dre Day, mm-hmm. and I think it was Jewel or someone singing the song. It's like not even Dre,
right?
You know, I think that was kind of just a subtle diss to
oh,
Dre.
Yeah. Well, not only that, but I think Suge liked to rub it in Dre's face that he owned the masters to all that music, you know, and you know you can't have it.
Suge,
you're
a dick.
Yo,
if you hear this, Suge, I'm just kidding, man. I love you, Suge. not really. No. Well, I just want to throw out a couple of my favorite tracks on the album. Scandalous.
Yeah.
I'm a big Nate Dogg fan.
Yeah.
Even solo, but Scandalous.
Oh, yeah.
good track. Got My Mind Made Up. How Do You Want It? The California Love track, of course.
Yeah.
Now, people, I posted this on Facebook. I was going to be interviewing you, and we're going to talk about this album.
Yeah.
A couple people wanted to say that they felt that this could be a solid one-disc album.
Really?
And
see,
I would have to agree.
Do you?
I do.
All right. Well, see, in my opinion, this was the only double disc, and this is obviously just my opinion. This is the only double disc that I felt should have been 2 discs. I think right after this, there was a trend set, and I think Biggie was the first to follow with a double disc,
mm-hmm.
and then Wu-Tang came after that, both of which I felt could have been compressed into one, more so than this album.
Okay.
I felt like it was the only album that really like merited 2 discs, only because, I mean, I'm just gonna go down. This is disc 2, book 2, or whatever, mm-hmm. the second disc. Can't See Me, one of my favorite Tupac songs of all time. Like just that you can hear how angry he is on that song. Like back when I was running around this very neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
doing not the best kind of stuff, I would listen to that song before I left, or maybe while I was doing it.
Yeah.
Shorty Wanna Be a Thug. I think we all wanted to when he was making it popular.
Yeah.
Holla at me, you know. You better beware where you lay. We better not find where you stay. And he's talking to Big, you know. So it's, you know, like, you because you know that, wonder why they call you bitch.
Yep.
Classic song. I mean, When We Ride, okay, that's all right. Thug Passion, though. I mean, there wasn't a lot of songs that you could play
mm-hmm.
that were considered gangster rap that would, you know, that girls were like, ooh, this is my jam.
Yep.
That was one of them.
Yeah.
Picture Me Rolling.
That's a good one.
So, you know, another classic in my opinion. Checkout Time, by far one of Death Row's collectively one of their best songs, is, you know, like a record label or a crew or whatever. Rather Be a Nigga with Richie Rich. I mean,
you gotta love the Richie Rich feature.
Oh, Richie Rich is
the
super
Bay Area.
Dope during this time. Oh yeah, All Eyes on Me, Run the Streets, which was another jam for ladies that, you know, wasn't soft.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, he did a real good job of, like, not being soft, but still making music that women could be like, oh, I love this song.
Right.
Heaven Ain't Hard to Find and Ain't Hard to Find. You know?
Isn't that funny? Why, like, those two songs back to back?
Yeah.
Ain't Hard to Find, Heaven Ain't Hard to Find.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, it probably got to the point where he was writing so much music at the time, it was just like, what the hell do we call the song? You know, I mean, because, I mean, you know, the reports from, like, his bodyguards and shit were like, the only, like, whenever we were rolling with him, all he ever wanted was pen. He needed a full pack of pens, a full notebook, a box of blunts, and you know, some whatever, Hennessy or whatever he was drinking. Like, and that's how he would roll in his limo, just writing. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah, that was his life, man.
And that's just disc two. I mean, when, you know, like,
would you say, now, if you had to pick disc one, disc two?
I'd have to go with disc two, personally. I think both of them are good.
Yeah.
But disc two for me, I mean, Two of America's Most Wanted, I love that song, obviously, because it was two of my favorite artists at the time, of Snoop and Pac. But, you know, it's one of those songs where even before everybody played it out, I just felt like, in terms of, you know, that CD, there was better songs. You know, I'm sure it got a lot of people amped up, and you know, because of Snoop and Pac, obviously. Yep. But How Do You Want It? I mean, I can go on forever. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I got to say, I love when Death Row and somehow Jodeci hooked up. You know?
Yeah.
That was cool, man.
Oh, yeah.
Murder Was a Case soundtrack. Yeah. Had a few of those on there.
Yeah. No, Casey and JoJo, I think. Yep. Really set the table for Nate Dogg to flourish because of, you know, kind of some of the stuff that they were doing. I mean, obviously, Nate Dogg had been doing music with Death Row before that, but I think when they saw, like, you can sing on these songs, and it doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, soft, you know what I mean? Like, so that kind of really blew open the door for Nate. And Nate Dogg just had a real distinctive voice and kind of a, you know, a way about him, a steeze. I hate
the
word swag.
He was the hook man for a minute there.
I don't want to say swag, but yeah.
Rest in peace, Nate.
Oh, yeah.
Rest in peace, Pac.
Right, right.
All right, man, we're going to take a break here, and we'll come back, and we'll get to the interview here.
All right.
We'll be right back.
Yeah.
I'm hungry, but I don't know what I want to eat.
Well, let's eat at White Castle.
No, I don't want little burgers. I want a big burger. Plus, my farts will really smell.
Okay, first off, your farts already smell. Second, you can just eat enough sliders to equal a regular burger.
No, I don't want White Castle.
Don't be an asshole. Eat at White Castle.
White Castle is not affiliated with this ad in any way, shape, or form.
Check.
Check.
All right, we're back. Half dozen.
Yes,
in
indeed.
In the house. All right, man, I got a question for you. This is a hypothetical question, and I gave you the option during the break which one to pick here.
Yep.
You chose the Outcast.
Uh-huh.
Now, this is the question. You're going on a road trip, right?
Okay.
Let's say you're in a two-door Prius.
Yeah.
All right, with Outcast, but you only get to pick one of the two for the road trip.
Andre.
You're going Andre off the bat? No question?
Yeah. I mean, for a long time, I think when they first came out, I liked Andre more. And it was, you know, just because I felt he was a lot more polished. And then for a long time, I thought Andre lost his fucking mind.
Yeah.
But I just think that what it was is that he wasn't crazy. He was setting a trend that's now being followed by, you know, 9% of the... I feel like there wouldn't be A$AP Rockies and Kendrick Lamar's and Danny Brown's and all these dudes without his influence.
Right.
He kind of made it okay to be really, really different and not viewed in like a, oh, he's a corny sellout Negro.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, and he made it acceptable to kind of do what you do, and for him to be, I guess, like, from down south in a place where, like, I've been in the South, you know, and I don't want to say that, you know, that they're like it's a more super dangerous place or anything, but the culture is just different, you know, especially me being from Minnesota. Like, we have, you know, a lot of people wouldn't know. They'd say, oh, Minnesota, you know, there's white people in snow. Like, we have a pretty history black culture here.
Right.
But it's just a completely different thing. Like, you know, down there, it's about riding slabs and you know, hustling and getting money and staying fresh. And, you know, and for him to kind of take more of a conscious route. And, like, while still being a mainstream artist before guys like Common and Talib Kweli and, you know, really got on, he was, you know, the first guy that I really knew who was on that, like, you know, the line from you know, no drugs and alcohol, so I can get the signal clear. Like, yep. How many dudes in, you know, 94 or 5 were saying shit like right. that? Yeah. You know, on the mainstream level, yeah. like that shit wasn't getting sold.
And
to
an
us.
Amazing MC at the same
oh,
time.
Oh, yeah. In my opinion, the most versatile MC ever. Like, I don't think he can do anything. Everything he does just sounds natural. Like, right. whether he's singing or, I mean, it's just, he's an artist more so than a rapper to me, you know? Right. Like, he's able to MC however he wants because he's an artist.
Right.
And that's why I like Andre so much, is because yeah. I feel like he gave birth to a lot of, you know, a lot of what is considered cool. And even before it was considered cool, his MCing skills are just through the roof. Like, right. I've never seen anybody other than Busta Rhymes whose style is just adaptable to whatever. He can yeah. just do whatever he wants, and it's seamless.
It seems at times that Andre is kind of influenced by, like, Prince and Jimi Hendrix. You know, it's like a mashup of that.
Yep, there's an awful lot of both of those dudes. Obviously, you know, I'd say, you know, a lot of Rick James too, just because of, you know, like the music that he was making, the music that they chose to emulate. Like, I would say a lot of Rick James too.
Yeah.
They're just.
Now, here's another, like, you're on a road trip, you're going to get into some conversation.
Okay.
Let's say, we're from Minnesota here. We've got the inside scoop on Prince,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
But chances are, Andre 3000 is going to be like, hey, check this out.
Right.
I talked to Prince the other day. Prince doesn't talk to anybody.
Right.
But he talks to Andre 3000.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So he's got some bootlegs, you know, some new shit you've never heard.
Yeah.
That's what I'm figuring. That's.
Oh, yeah.
On a road trip, he's bringing that shit out.
Yep.
Yeah. So you're going to Andre. That's you validate that pretty well. I gotta say, it's not just off the cuff deal. That's,
oh no,
you knew.
Oh yeah, no, right away. And to Big Boy's credit, he, like, his recent stuff that I've, like, you know, his last two albums mm-hmm. have been really great.
Right.
Like, he's stepped his. I thought that he kind of was the weaker portion of Outkast for a while there, and now these last two albums have put me in a position where I'm like, they're on the same level again,
right.
I would have to say, you know.
I haven't heard the new one, but is the Sir Luscious Left Foot album?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. Well, let's get into the interview here.
Right.
Half Dozen. Half.
Yeah.
One. Okay, so where does the name come from?
Half Dozen is actually, it's in reference to my height. I'm 6'6". So, it's kind of that has a little bit to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my parents were inner city black folks, you know what I mean? But they didn't really want me running the streets. Like, I wasn't allowed to, like, really swear in my house growing up. My grandma was old South.
All right.
And so I had to, like, you know, really be, like, you know, head immersed in books and all that. But when I did choose to run the street, a friend, like, my best friend growing up, his name was Anthony Armstrong, and he was in a gang, but his nickname was Six Shot. And so it has something to do with that. But Half Dozen really stands for Minneapolis 612.
Right.
Gotcha. So it's all kind right. of a culmination of all that. All
right.
Yeah.
This is your debut album, right?
Yeah.
The Whittier Lions
yep.
album?
Yep, it is.
Now, the productions and lyrics they're amazing. I got to say, that's the first track on that album, Hope. Now,
yeah.
Don't take this the wrong way. I was listening to the track, the album this morning, dropping the kids off at daycare. I got a 6-month-old. And, He was just kind of the first track in that beat. There's kind of like this, like a, I don't know if it's a synthesized sound or like an organ or something. It was like, I didn't have it turned all the way up because there's cussing. But it was just enough that you could hear the beat. And the baby was just like cooing.
Oh yeah.
You know.
Oh yeah.
And then by track two, he was asleep. But has nothing to do with the music.
Hey, it's all good. It's all good. I'm glad you think so.
It's baby friendly, all right? Just turn it down a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Let them enjoy the music.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I read the interview you did with CD Pages
uh-huh.
where with you and...
Jack Spencer.
Yeah.
Yep.
And Dimitri, right? Dimitri is how you say it?
Yep, Dimitri Killstorm, yeah.
How'd you guys hook up? You cover that in the interview, but for people
bit,
who don't know.
Yeah, me and Dimitri met at an event that was called the Twin Cities Battle League. It was hosted by Truth Mays, Autumn Compton, and Teresa Rose. This took place probably, I want to say, either 3 or 3.5 years ago is when they started doing it. And it was at the Blue. It was held at the Blue Nile, and it was just, you know, rap battles. Like, not the scripted kind of grind time ones. This was, like, over beats, mm-hmm. you know, so... As opposed to just, you know, And, you know, not to discredit Grind Time, because I feel like, you know, that has its own place. But musically, it's not really appealing to me. You know, okay. I mean, the punchlines are super funny. Yep. And because they're kind of pre-scripted, you know, it makes for amazing battles. Mm-hmm. But to do that, you know, to freestyle rap battle against an opponent over a beat is pitting not only you against your opponent, but you against yourself at the same time with, you know, while having to stay on rhythm. Like, you know, which I feel like a lot of those Grind Time dudes may not be able to do, just given their, you know, their multis and, you know, which that stuff doesn't really matter to me. What matters to me is, you know, how musically inclined you are on top of being witty and you know, and able to diss someone or play the dozens or whatever. So that's what kind of event it was. And it was the first time I'd ever, and I actually got the flyer for that event here at Spy House. I was recording with my sister's husband at the time. She's since divorced, but we were just like doing it in his crib. There was no real studio. We're just kind of doing it for fun. And they had a flyer set up here at Spy House, and my sponsor, because I'm sober and I'm in AA and all that. Okay. He was here with me, and he saw the flyer for it. And he was like, "You should get in that." And I had never been on stage. I had never, you know, anything like that. So I was.
That'll get you adapted pretty quick.
Oh, I remember like thinking to myself, like, I don't want to do this at all. You know, like I definitely don't want to do this. But he convinced me, and I knew it was a way, you know, that. Like, I would meet people, and it would get my name out there, even whether it was for good or bad. It's, you know, just better to have your name out there. Mm-hmm. Pardon me. And so I went, and I lost horribly for a long time. And I kept losing horribly or choking and not rapping at all, because it's weird when you get up there for the first time and the light's on you and everybody's watching you. And then I kept going back, though, and progressively I got better to the point where, like, I was making the finals the last 2 years that they did it, so...
Do you have, like, a ballpark figure? How many times did you lose battles or just not at all?
Well, see, the cool thing was is I'd say I lost probably six times.
Man, that's – I got to say, that's noble, because that takes some balls there. Some people would just tuck their tail between their legs and walk away.
These weren't like, oh, man, you almost had them. They were – fucking L's, like fucking real bad L's. Like a couple times I didn't get a word out, you know what I mean?
Right.
And so I took some pretty bad L's. But then you know, I got to the point where, you know, I just had thicker skin and I was able to, you know, kind of see how things worked. And it ended up working out for me in the long run. I met Dimitri there. Yep. I met a guy named Elaborate, Elab for short. But we made a group. Me and him are a group called Conflict of Interest, and we've got tons of recording material, which isn't released yet. But I think when I met Dimitri, I think his beats really catered to my style a lot, you know, and like soul sample, you know, stuff like that. That's like, you know, I love it. You know what I mean? To me, that is what hip hop is. Like it represents, like, you know, what it was when I was growing up, and I really wasn't into that stuff. You know, I thought NWA was the coolest shit, but then when you realize, like, hey, they sampled these old records, like, that's when I started to be like, oh, well, let me check out this East Coast, and then, you know, you hear the same thing, you know, they were doing, that's where hip-hop came from, was recycling old music and making it new, and that's, you know, that was, like, the inspiration for songs like Brand of Nostalgia, and, you know.
Which is a great song, great video.
Yeah.
I gotta say, Slug in that video. I was enjoying the song, you know, and the video, and then Slug does this crazy, just some funny ass dance.
He actually, I didn't know this, but Slug was, you know, those dudes are really about like this, like the whole embodiment of, you know, what we do, and like he used to be a breaker, and he was a DJ before he was a rapper.
Okay,
and he actually on the Welcome to Minnesota tour had a 5 minute. Thing where he rapped and DJed at the same time. I've never seen that.
Oh, really?
Done. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So that was crazy. Like, actually scratching records and rap, like, that's crazy. You know, for him to have that much concentration and skill to do that, that's pretty amazing. So, yeah. Wow. But we shot that video with a guy called Dave Wilson. He's done a lot of work for Rhyme Sayers. I think he's worked with Frank Ocean and just, like, a lot of, you know, a lot of big name artists. But we were able to meet him at a time where we we needed him basically, yeah. and he was willing to work with us, and so he did on Lost in Translation and Brand of Nostalgia are both Dave Wilson's videos.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Either of those two videos, great introductory ways to come into your music there.
Yep.
Brand of Nostalgia is, you know, the concept, everything is, I've never heard that before, and that's
right.
Just the title itself is exactly what it is, you know?
Yeah, and very I remember cool. I wrote the song, I was writing the song, actually, mm-hmm. and I mean, as personal as my album is, I think it was kind of like, for me, what I was trying to say is, like, I really don't like where the, you know, where the art crap I love and, you know, like, which represents, you know, like, who I am, mm-hmm. was headed. So I, you know, I wanted to make music that, you know, while it was still, like, catchy and not do it in, like, a you guys are fucking stupid kind of way. Because right. I don't want, you know, who am I to be condescending to, you know, what, that's what you know and that's what makes you.
Right.
You know, so I wanted to do it in a way where it was, like, kind of a history lesson, but still just kind of, you know, being like, hey, you know, do your research. Don't just, you know, don't just think that, you know, whoever is the greatest rapper of all time, you know, like, go into it. Because, you know, there was a time where I thought that NWA was the greatest rappers of all time.
Right.
And then I went back, and stuff that I'd heard when I was a kid, like Rakim, you know, and those guys, then I was like, God, these are the real MCs. Like, you know, so.
You know, also in the fashion sense, when are Andre 3000's hockey pads or shoulder pads going to come back? Hold on to those, right? Because your kids are going to want to put them on.
Exactly. You can pass them for your grandkids.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, yeah. And I think it just, when I wrote a verse to it, the first verse of the song I wrote,
okay.
And because of how I worded the first verse, I thought of, and I was like, what am I going to call this? Because I wanted to call it something like, you know, well, it's like old, but it's new.
Right.
And then I thought of the phrase brand nostalgia, and I was like, that's a winner.
Yeah.
And it just sounded like a winner when I said it. It was, you know, because it was funny. Like,
right.
I thought, I was laughing to myself.
Yeah.
Like, that shit's hilarious,
yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. Now, as you said, the album is very personable.
Uh-huh.
Or personal, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Have My Doubts.
Uh-huh.
Is that, I mean, that's, I don't know if that's factual or if you want to share that.
I don't really want to get into it, but yeah, the stories on that on the record are true.
Okay.
Every story on the record, on the whole Woody or Alliance, is true. The only one that's not directly pertaining to my life is In the Streets, and that's just kind of a generalized, you know, it's a culmination of stories that I was around.
Okay.
You know, but Have My Doubts is verbatim what, you know, stuff that I saw growing up. Like, that was my life, you know, as a kid. My parents got into a tiff and really bad things happened. And I'd like people to check out the record,
right, yeah,
you know, as
to,
opposed
to know the story.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
And absolutely worth checking out.
Oh, yeah. One of my favorite songs that I've ever written, in my opinion. I mean, just because I think it was a song that I wanted to write for a really long time.
Okay.
But every time I set out to do it, it never sounded right.
Okay.
And that was
And I'd imagine that's a little therapeutic at the same time.
Oh, it is. Right? It is. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff that I talk about that people can... I remember that song in particular, we were at... During the Welcome to Minnesota tour, on our Mankato stop, which was the night before... It was... So that would have been March 4th, the night before we came back to the Twin Cities.
Mm-hmm.
There was an older white couple, and I think I also talked about this in my interview with City Pages, but, you know, they were mid-40s, early-50s,
okay.
And they came up to me like, we don't like rap. We just came here to bring our kids, and we heard that song, and the woman was in tears, and she was like, you know, I think you're an amazing spirit, and I wish there was more young people like you.
Right.
And that's, you know, what kind of what we were talking about, you know, I would like for my music to be viewed like that, you know
right.
what I mean?
Right.
Preferably, as opposed to like, oh, he's a really good rapper, you know, I want to be considered a good musician.
Yeah.
Without having to play, you know, instruments. You know what I mean?
So. Well, there you go. Your music reaches, it transcends age, gender, race, you know. That's there you go.
Oh, yeah.
Sick. My grandma heard the album.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. No. My grandma got the album and she gave it to me.
Right.
She's like,
exactly.
You got to hear this shit.
You can check this out. I swear.
Now, we talked about this before we started recording. The album title, Whittier Alliance, I had no idea what the hell that meant.
Uh-huh.
Looked it up. It's the neighborhood you were born and raised in?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, I was born and raised in Whittier on 26th and 3rd. 2613 3rd Avenue South was like the house. It was my grandmother's house. My mom and dad, when I was born, lived like back behind on 26 and 1st, and at one point we stayed on 27th or 25th and Clinton, but we were always really close to home base, which was grandma's house.
Okay.
And I remember when shortly after my sister was born, she was 5, or I was 5, and that's when we moved to my grandma's house, because if you listen to Have My Doubts, you'll kind of understand why my grandma kind of took custody of us from my parents. Right. And was kind of like, no, you need to get out of that environment. But yeah, right. I was raised in this neighborhood.
Is Dimitri also from this area?
Dimitri, I believe. I know he's from, I want to say like the St. Louis Park Hopkins area.
Okay.
But he's lived in Minneapolis. Dimitri's like a really independent dude whose family wasn't really well off to be from that area.
Mm-hmm.
He was, you know, he's kind of been on his own for a long time.
Okay.
When I first met Dimitri, he lived in Uptown behind the Dunn Brothers that's on Lake Street. Yeah, Lake Street, right near Lake Calhoun.
Mm-hmm.
And then shortly after that, he moved to the area, and it just made it, you know, that much easier for us to work with one another.
Right.
And another thing about working with Dimitri is he was really not, like, he didn't get a stick up his ass when I was like, hey, I love the sample, but I don't like the way it sounds. So can we change it to sound like this?
Yeah.
He was really, like, you know, really catered to, you know, like, what I wanted.
Right.
More so than, you know, without really having a reason to, because I had no previous material. Wasn't, mm-hmm. you know, I'm not a classically trained musician, and I don't produce music, you know
yeah.
what I mean? But I know what I like.
Right.
I know what I think sounds good,
mm-hmm.
and I think other people like, so.
So this is literally, like, the first recordings you've had, like, on CD, or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
You don't have anything else prior to this?
I've recorded many songs with Jake, with our group Conflict of Interest. We just never put them out, never released them.
Okay.
You know.
Okay. Not even MySpace.
Well, there's records. I mean, yeah. I did songs on there. I wouldn't tell you to go look them up because they suck. But,
right.
You know, it's just part of the growth process. Like, I think before I battled in the Battle League, I was really focused on writing music because I knew, in the grand scheme of things, that's where you can actually become an artist, and that's where you can do this, you know, legitimately, or be considered, you know, good at, or, you know, and taking my mind out of the music part and putting it in the battle mind frame kind of set me back a little bit. So then when I went to write music again, it was like I wanted it to be all punchlines, and, you know,
yeah.
where, you know, that kind of took away from what I want to do as an artist, so
right.
I had to get back into that. And
well, knowing that now, I don't think there's any point on this album besides the track with Slug where it was kind of like lying,
yeah.
him lying, you know what
oh,
I mean?
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah.
There, you can't tell
yeah.
that, you know, you went through that struggle to write like that.
Oh, yeah, no.
At least from my side of here.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it just got, you know, the more that I wrote, the easier it became.
Right.
For me to be like,
okay,
this is how I want to phrase this, because, you know, because it's personal, I don't want to feel like I didn't do the stories justice, because they impacted me in a huge way,
mm-hmm.
and kind of made me who I am. So, you know,
right.
I wanted to put them right; otherwise, I wouldn't have felt comfortable with them. So,
cool. So, what you guys wrapped up the Welcome to Minnesota tour with Atmosphere, Brother Ali.
Yep, and Carnage, and
Carnage,
Get Cryfy DJs. Yeah, we did that on March 5th. We went out from the 1st to the 5th. We hit Bemidji, St. Cloud, or Bemidji, Duluth, St. Cloud, Mankato, and then here in the Twin Cities at First Avenue, which is like, you know, my dream was to, you know, growing up was to play First Avenue stage. So, you know, being able to do that, like,
to a packed crowd, I imagine,
yeah,
that was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was definitely, my dad was a musician too, and my mom and dad are both passed on. And so for me to do that, you know, and I remember growing up being like, you know, only the greatest musicians, like my dad would tell me, only the greatest musicians in the world get to play there. And so, you know, for me to be able to do that, and he's not with me anymore, is that, like, you know, I had like goosebumps and kind of was tearing up and shit, like that meant a lot to me, you know.
Very cool.
Oh,
very
yeah.
cool.
Oh yeah. And now we, you know, then we've been able to play it since again, and
mm-hmm.
we're gonna play it again soon, and like, so it's pretty cool that, like, you know, the one place in the city where I grew up, which is a huge, I mean, Minnesota in itself, especially the Twin Cities, is a huge, we've had a huge impact on music from all different genres, but I think hip-hop, in terms of, you know, independent hip-hop or underground, whatever you want to classify it as, like, we've had it. I don't want to say as big an impact as, you know, like Prince had or Bob Dylan or whatever, but we've had a pretty huge impact. And
independent hip-hop-wise, absolutely.
Yeah. I think, you know, so for me to be able to, like, you know, I grew up looking up to guys like Slug and Iself Divine and Brother Ali and Carnage. And so, you know, for me to be able to, like, work with dudes like that is, you know, that's, like, unbelievable, you
right,
know?
Yeah.
It's unbelievable, especially, you know, considering 3 years ago nobody knew who I was.
Right. Yeah. Like, you know, it's well-deserved, you know? It's not like you're a shitty MC that got lucky, you
right,
know what I mean?
Right, We try. Yeah. We're working on it. We're trying to get better for you guys.
And I heard about you from Amber Ace,
yep,
Cleveland. She's like, you got to check this guy out. You got to get him on the show.
Yep.
And here we are.
Yeah.
And I'm glad she did, because, you know, it's like, you know, for local artists, independent artists, you really gotta look for this shit. It doesn't.
Yeah.
So, I mean, sometimes it falls into your lap. And that's
well, yeah. I mean, and you know, most of that is because, you know, we're out here on our own. Like, I don't have a record contract. You know, me and Dimitri scrounged together all the money that, you know, it took us to shoot videos, to press this album. Like, you know, pulled favors from friends, and, you know, like, only because we have people who believe in us, you know, and to, you know, to me, like, there was a point in my life where I couldn't be counted on to give you a phone call, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So for me to, you know, go from that to having people be like, hey, what do you need from me to help you, you know, whether it's monetarily or support or, you know, whatever, like, that's crazy to have, you know, my friends and my family be like, we believe in you that much,
right,
you know, when...
That's
say,
your family, man.
Right.
They're behind you. That's that's a good start.
Oh, yeah.
But so coming up here, you got the Honorable Mention compilation show. You're going to be playing something there. And then you got Soundset you're playing at, right?
Yeah, we're playing Soundset this year. That's on May 26th, obviously out at Canterbury Downs with, you know... You can look it up, but
Snoop Dogg
will be there.
Atmosphere,
of course, Brother
the
Ali,
crew, yeah.
Busta Rhymes, POS, Schoolboy Q. I mean, there's, you know, if you know Soundset, you know, it's actually the biggest 1 day hip hop festival in the country. You know, so in terms of ones that last just a day, but yeah, so there'll be 20,000 people there. We'll probably perform for about 200 or 300 of them, but that's cool.
Right.
You know what I mean?
That's a good crowd.
Just to say that I was able to play it,
yeah,
you know, to me that's a big deal.
Right.
You know, so
this will actually be my first sound set. I've never even been to one yet.
Yeah, I was there last year, but prior to that, I had missed a few in a row. The last one that I was at before 2012 was at the Metrodome parking lot. I think it was the first really big one before they moved to Canterbury
Sounds
Downs,
right.
And it's crazy though, because something always. Every year, something weird happens with the weather during Soundset, and hopefully we can break that cycle this year.
Right.
But
Minnesota,
it doesn't
man.
Look like it.
Yeah,
it's snowing.
Yeah,
it's
unpredictable weather.
Right.
Today
yeah.
we're getting snow. It's May 1st.
On May Day.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, any future projects? What's next?
We're working on the follow up to Whittier Alliance, and you know we're not going to call it Whittier Alliance or anything, but it's just solely Dimitri's production again.
Mm-hmm.
Me, obviously MCing, and I think this next one we're going to release in the fall to be for free, probably 6 to 8 songs. You know, just something, just an EP, quick for people to, you know, remember we're still here and we're working on music, and we're already, the EP's ready. We're just gonna cut it down and, you know, see what, trim the fat, obviously, but we're already working on the next album, which will be released around the same time as we just released Whittier Alliance.
Okay.
So about a year from now.
Cool.
But
and this album just came out like a month ago, right?
Yeah.
Just over a month.
Yep.
Been going pretty good, I hope.
Yeah, it's been doing, it's far exceeded my expectations. I think a lot of that was due to the, you know,
the
obviously the Welcome to Minnesota tour. We sold a lot of copies on that tour. So that obviously, you know, helped us move a lot of product that we probably wouldn't have, you know, had we not been on that.
Yeah.
People received it pretty well. And, you know, there's been some very, very, very great things written about it. You know, I'm glad that people view it like that or hold it in high regard. I'm really appreciative, for sure.
Well, where can people check out the music here?
You can go to Woody or Alliance on. You can go to iTunes. It's under Woody or Alliance. Half Dozen of Dimitri Killstorm. You can also go to Fifth Element Online and buy the album, like a tangible copy. Pretty sure we got it in Electric Fetus just recently, so they have it as well. But you can go on CD Baby. I think maybe as far as online, that's all we have because our website's being built right now. So okay. until it's done,
you guys on Facebook there?
I have an artist page on Facebook, but it's just for me. We don't have a Woody or Lions, okay? Because it's not really a group; it's just the name of the album.
And Half Dozen is HAPH.
HAPHDUZN.
Right. Facebook it. Google it.
Yep.
If you spell Facebook it any other way, you're.
Yep.
Don't do it.
If you Google it, you'll definitely find us. There's a lot of stuff on there, you know.
Thanks. Thanks for doing the show, man.
Thank you.
I know you got to run here, but thanks for doing the show. I appreciate it.
Not a problem.
You can check out thankyourob.com for past episodes of this show. I also do graphic design work, I Define Design. I also do another podcast called Some People's Kids Podcast. It's a comedy podcast. I'm a pretty funny guy.
Yeah, right? Hey.
You better laugh at that.
Right.
I'm just kidding. But thanks for listening, and any last words over there?
I'd just like to say thanks for having me, and check out the album, Woody or Alliance.
He loves you. I love you.
About it.
Ain't nothing but against the party.
Oh shit. You done fucked up, man. You done put two of America's most wanted in the same motherfucking place at the same motherfucking time. Y'all niggas about to feel this. Break out the champagne glasses and motherfucking condoms. Have one on us, alright? Picture perfect. I paint a perfect picture. Bomb a hoochies with precision. My intentions took you with you with that and double OP. Dog, my fucking homie, use a cold ass nigga on them all.
Showing up. I keep my hand on my gun, cause they got me on the run. Now I'm back in the courtroom, waiting on the outcome. Free Tupac is all that's on the nigga's mind. But at the same time, it seems they trying to take mine. So I'ma get smart and get defensive and shit. And put together a million march for some gangster shit.
So now they got a slate. Two multi-millionaire motherfuckers catching cases. Bitches get ready for the throwdown. The shit's about to go down. Me and Snoop about to clown. I'm losing my religion. I'm vicious on these stool pigeons. You might be deep in this game, but you got the rules missing. Niggas be acting like you're savage. They out to get the cabbage. I got nothing but love for my niggas living life.
I got a pit named P. She nigga Reno. I got a house out in the hills right next to Chino. And I think I got a black memo, but my dream is to own a fly casino like Bugsy Siegel and do it all illegal and get scooped up by the little homie in the Riga. It feel good to you, baby bubba. You see, this is for the G's and the keys, motherfucker.
Now follow as we ride, motherfuck the rest. Two of the best from the west side, and I can make you famous. Niggas been dying for years, so how can they blame us? I live in fear of a felony. I never stop bailing needs, motherfucking G's. If you got another woman, two of them everybody smoke one.
Affiliated with the